have you all got Bibles, or were they not put out? Perhaps we can have the Bibles put out so that people have got them to refer to, please. That'd be good. Okay, so Happy New Year, everyone. So have you got over Christmas? Yesterday was the last of the 12 days of Christmas, so did you get all your decorations down and the cards down and everything? Finished all those chocolates you were given? Trying to get the weight off again? All the things, and you think, oh, that's it now, thank goodness for that. That's it till like September, when the stores start putting all their festive stuff out again, and you think, oh, no, not again, so early. So, end of Christmas? Not completely. The Christmas story's not completely finished yet. Now, And we have the first picture. This is the more popular scenario for most people of what Christmas was all about. Okay, so what have we got there? We've got the stable, nice and clean, nice cozy. And we've got the Mary and Joseph there in the middle somewhere. We've got the shepherds coming in, clutching their lambs, gathering round, kneeling down round the cup. And then for good measure, you put in the three wise men who are coming with their gifts. Okay? So this is what people think. Popular idea of what Christmas is about. That's it. Put the crypt away, put the things away, take your cards down. That's the end of it. But in fact, it was some considerable time later that, in fact, these strangers from afar turned up to worship the baby Jesus. And so today we're going to look at that part of the story. Just a minute, I need to have a drink. Because yesterday was what is called the Feast of the Epiphany. Oh, thank you. And that's where many Christian traditions will remember the visit of these three wise men to the infant Jesus. So what does Epiphany mean? Well, it just means a revealing, a showing. And it was particularly used in context with the coming of a God. And so here we have Jesus, God made man, being shown, revealed to these people, these strangers who travelled a long way. Sorry, pages are stuck. Travelled a long way to look for him and to find him. And although they were probably rich and important in their own right, had everything they needed in many ways, they realized that a child had been born who was someone who was really important, who was someone far greater, who needed to be worshipped, a God, and they came to worship him. So one of our dear girls is going to come and going to read our first passage for us. So if you could turn to Matthew chapter 2, and we're reading the first two verses. Yours will come later, Aurelia.
Jesus was born in the town of Bethlehem in Judea during the time when Herod was king. Soon afterwards, some men who studied the stars came from the east to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the baby born to be the king of the Jews? We saw his star when it came up in the east, and we have come to worship him." When King Herod heard about this, he was very upset, and so was everyone else in Jerusalem. He called together all the chief priests and the teachers of the law and asked them, "Where will this Messiah be born?" "In the town of Bethlehem in Judea," they answered. "For this is what the prophet wrote, 'Bethlehem in the land of Judah, you are by no means the least of the leading cities of Judah, for from you will come a leader who will guide my people Israel.'" So Herod called the visitors from the east to a secret meeting and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem with these instructions: "Go and make a careful search for the child, and when you find him, let me know, so I may too may go and worship him." And they left, and on their way they saw the same star they had seen in the east. When they saw it, how happy they were. What joy was theirs. It went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. They went into the house, and when they saw the child with his mother Mary, they knelt down and worshipped him. They brought out their gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and presented them to him. Then they returned to their country by another road, since God had warned them in a dream not to go back to Herod.
Thank you very much, Grace. So this is the story in the Bible. It's written by Matthew about how these people came from afar to worship the baby Jesus. Now, there are lots of stories and suppositions surrounding the story of these wise men. Lots of discussion as to where did they actually come from. Were they from Persia? Did they come from Arabia? There's talk even of them coming from Afghanistan. Maybe even came up from Africa, Northern Africa. And there's some people who think they may in fact have been Jewish, in that they were Jews who'd moved out of the land of Israel, maybe at the time of the exile, we don't know, and had stayed there, not returned, and they had seen this. We just don't know. And what sort of people were they? Astronomers, they studied the stars. Kings, rulers, tribal leaders, wise men. There's lots of stories, lots of poems written about these people, giving various slants on the story. And there's lots of different artists' impressions of what they were like way back from the early centuries after Christ. But what were they really like? What do we really know about them? And so what does this passage that we've just read tell us about it? So have a look, and then I want you to tell me, what does it tell you? What does the Bible say about these people who came to worship Jesus? Sorry? They studied the stars, yes. They saw the importance of worship, yes. What else does it tell us? Sorry? They brought gifts, yes, they brought gifts. Okay, what else? Were they men, women, children? Men, right? How many were there? Does it say that? Where does it say three? Does it say three in your Bible? There were three gifts, yes, but that doesn't mean to say that there were three of them, does it? No, they could have shared, sort of, we don't know. Could have just been two, or we just don't know, okay? What else about them? What did they do? They studied the stars and... They had dreams from God, yes. And they saw this very special star, this particular showing in the sky, and they thought, that is important. We need to find out what that means, doesn't it? So they travelled a long way, it says from afar. And they followed this star in order to find him. And did they find him easily? Why not? What did they have to do? Yes, they went to Herod first. They thought, well, he's a king, he'll probably know. So they went to him, and eventually Herod looked at the prophecies, told them where to go, and so they went and they found him. And when they arrived, did they find him there in the stable or the cave or wherever it was? Yes? Does it say they found him in the stable? They found him. Where did they find him? In a house. They found him in a house. So obviously they'd moved out from the original temporary accommodation, been given somewhere to live. And he was now a child. He doesn't say he was actually a baby. They gave him gifts and then they worshipped him. And then they went off back home and they listened to a dream from God and avoided going back via the via Herod to tell him. So why did Matthew include this story in his account of the birth of Jesus, do you think? Why do you think he would think that this was an important message to give to the people he was writing to? Yes, seeing God to be worshipped. He wanted people to see that this was a God to be worshipped. But also it's interesting to note that Matthew was writing primarily for his fellow Jews. And when he's writing his account of the birth and the life of Jesus, he's concentrating on the fact that Jesus was the long-awaited Messiah. And he was it was predicted, it was foretold in the Old Testament. But he wanted also the people to know, the Jewish people to know, that Jesus didn't come just for those who were living there in Israel at that time. He was not just for the Jewish people, but in fact he was for the whole world. And what better way to emphasize this was to have people coming from a long way away, foreigners coming, foreigners who may or may not have been Gentiles, but they certainly weren't living in Israel at that time, they coming to seek him and coming to worship him. So it's not important how many there were. It's not important where they came from. But it was important that they recognized him as the promised king, the long-awaited Messiah, and so they came to worship him. And also, it's showing that Jesus was not just for the Jews, just not for the people around him, not just for the humble people, like the shepherds who'd been the first to be told, and who lived in the area, but Jesus was for all people. The poor and humble, yes, but he was also for the rich and the more powerful. And this has been the message, if we can see glimpses of this message throughout the Old Testament, that the promised one was going to be for all nations. He would be a blessing to all people. He was not to be exclusively a tribal God, as so often was worshipped in those early days, but he was a God for all the world. And one example is in Isaiah chapter 49, verse 6, when Isaiah is saying that the promised one would not just be for the Jews, but also that all the world would be saved. So I think that is the important thing of why Matthew includes this, for us to know that Jesus is not just for one particular, God is just not the God of one particular people, but he is for all people. And that includes us, because we're certainly not Jewish, at least don't think any of us have any Jewish blood in, maybe some of you have. If you are, you're very blessed because you've got that long history as well. But we are outside of that, but God is for us too. And it's for us to share it with all people everywhere. Okay, so that's the first bit of the story that we need to look at today. But there's still more that we need to look at. And this tends to be ignored because it's not very comfortable reading. So, can I have my next reader, please? Have we got Aurelia there? Thank you. And Aurelia is going to read from 13 through to 18.
After they had left, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph and said, Herod will be looking for the child in order to kill him. So get up, take the child and his mother, and escape to Egypt, and stay there until I tell you to leave. Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and left during the night for Egypt, where he stayed until Herod died. This was done to make what the Lord had said through the prophet come true. I called my son out of Egypt. When Herod realized that the visitors from the east had tricked him, he was furious. He gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its neighborhood who were 2 years and younger. This was done in accordance with what he learnt from the visitors about the time when the star had appeared. In this way, what the prophet Jeremiah had said came true. A sound is heard in Ramah, the sound of bitter weeping. Rachel is crying for her children. She refuses to be comforted, for they are dead.
Thank you very much, Aurelia. I wonder how many of you went to see nativity plays with children over before Christmas. And you picture the scene, you know, you've got Mary and Joseph and the shepherds come in, the wise men come in, and then at the very end you've got all the children, the ones that haven't had particular parts will be dressed up as angels or lambs or whatever, and they all stand there and gather round and sing Away in a Manger, and it's all nice and cosy. Isn't that lovely? Isn't that nice? They love to act out the Christmas story when in Africa. When I was there in Baloba, I remember my first Christmas, and they were having this play on Christmas Day when they were acting it out. I can remember them coming and banging on the doors, looking for somewhere to stay and shouting. And it always ended with this scene of the soldiers coming and doing this mass killing of the children. And it's not something that we're used to, is it? They used to love that bit because they could really put their theatrical skills into operation and just loved it. But also, thinking about it, probably for people living in areas of parts of the world where there is conflict, such as in the Congo, this was not an out-of-the-way thing. It wasn't something that you sort of pushed under the carpet that you ignored. It wasn't so strange to them. Whereas we in Britain today would think, oh no, we don't do things like that. That's not very nice at all. And so when we come to this part of the story, it's not very nice. It's not coming very comfortable, but it's one that we need to look at. Because as we sort of go away from the wise men go back and then we carry on with the story, we realise that there's something not right. Joseph and Mary flee to Egypt with their small son Jesus. They go away in the middle of the night. And they become refugees. Before Christmas, Carl was talking to us about Joseph. Those of you who are here remember him. And who was a man who listened to God, who acted on what he heard from God. And he also talked about him being the patron saint of all sorts of different people. I wonder if he's also patron saint of refugees. Maybe that would make sense, wouldn't it? Because the refugees are people that have been around forever, really, haven't they? Right down through history, people have had to flee, have taken this route of being a refugee. I certainly remember during the Second World War. I was alive then, some of you weren't. And our family gave hospitality to this German girl during the holidays. She had been brought, she and her twin brothers had been brought over from Germany to a school in Britain to escape from the Nazi regime. And our church took responsibility to give these children a home during the holidays. And we had this girl, Ursula. I can always remember her. And recently we've been back in touch and she's still alive. And not very well, but she's doing pretty well. But she's still alive today. And it's great to have that contact with her again. But, okay, today we hear so much about refugees, even more so, don't we? Every time we turn on the radio, the television, read the newspapers, whatever, we're talking about people who are fleeing, people who are becoming refugees. So why do people become refugees? What is it that drives them to flee from their homes and to seek refuge elsewhere? Sorry? Violence, yes? To save their life, yes. To survival, to save their lives, yes. Wars, yes. Famine, persecution, sometimes natural disasters. The leaders of the country, yes, they're in fear of the leadership, fear of reprisals being taken against them, perhaps because they've been speaking out against evil regimes and so on and so forth. So here we have Joseph taking this step to flee with Mary and the baby and the young child Jesus. And so it wasn't an easy decision, I can imagine. They were probably beginning to settle down in Bethlehem. If they moved into a house, perhaps Joseph had got a job as a carpenter, and they think, well, we'll stay here for a bit, this is fine. But suddenly, he's warned in a dream, he's got to flee. So why was it that he was having to go? It was because Herod was after him. Now, Herod was known as was the king of the Jews. And you might think, well, that's a pretty important sort of person. But in fact, he wasn't so important as he thought he might have been. Because Israel was under the Romans at that time, under the authority of the Romans. And Herod had his position as king of the Jews, as sort of like a puppet king. He was there just to appease the Roman authorities and make sure that the people behaved themselves and that they didn't rise up against the colonial people, the Romans. And in many ways, he was onto a good thing, because although he didn't have ultimate power, he did have a certain amount of power. He had status, and if he played his cards right with the authorities, then he was onto a very good thing. He was safe and he had a good lifestyle. He had his wives and children and all the rest of it. The last thing he wanted was for some upstart to come onto the scene and to upset the status quo, because then he would get the blame. You're there to keep the peace for us, said the Roman authorities, and you must make sure that we don't have any trouble. And so now he hears of this child being born who's going to be a possible future king of the Jews. And he is threatened. And so he takes action. So when he hears this news from the wise men, when they come asking a direction, he puts into place Plan A. Plan A was that, okay, the wise men, these men, go and find Jesus, come back and tell him just exactly where he is, and then he can send people in to take out the child that's a threat to him. End of story. Everything will be done, and his position will be safe, and he can sleep easily in his bed again. But plan A doesn't work. And he realizes that these men have given him the slip. They haven't come back. They haven't come to tell him. So what was he going to do? So he has to think up plan B. So he needs to get rid of this baby, this child who's a threat to him. But he's not sure which one it is. So, well, let's just kill all of them to make sure. All the boys of that age were to be eliminated, just to make sure. That's awful, isn't it? All these innocent children. And I suppose in today's world, we'd call it, well, tough. Collateral damage. Nice word to use to rather cover over it. Well, they just happened to be there. And so doesn't this story lead us with lots of questions? Lots of questions. Why do the innocents suffer? Why are children killed and maimed and destroyed in this way? Why do these things happen? And there's just no easy answers. And I'm not standing here today to say, this is what happens, this is why. I certainly can't give you one. Because here we have a man in a position of power who feels threatened and is not going to let anyone get in his way. So in this story that we've read, what do we have? We have refugees. We have mass killings. We have children, innocent children and people, being suffering, being killed, maimed, used. Does that sound familiar to you? Surely this has been the picture throughout history. The vulnerable, weak, marginalized people who get exploited or seen as being of no consequence or value or can be used, and particularly so of children. Makes your hearts cry, doesn't it? At the end of this last year, UNICEF produced a report which I found. And this is one of the things it said. This is how it begins. 2017 has been a devastating year for children trapped in conflicts. They come under attack in spaces where they should be safe, in homes, schools, and hospitals, and on playgrounds. Children were deliberately targeted in many conflicts. They were used as human shields, killed, maimed, abducted, and recruited to fight. Millions of children also bore the brunt of diseases brought on by crushing wars. And we can think of examples about that we're hearing every day, and we've got a few pictures to show you as I talk about them. We hear a lot about the conflict in Yemen. Supposedly, rebels fighting against the authorities. But in reality, it's a proxy war between Iran and Saudi Arabia, two nations who want to be seen as the most powerful and most important, and children and vulnerable people starving, famine, cholera epidemics in disease with no chance of getting out. Syria, this conflict has been going on for so long. So many children are being in refugee situations or are trapped in rebel-held parts of the cities. There's an area of Damascus which is held by rebels, with children there who are dying of diseases that could be treated, but there's no medical help. And I think it was just either last night or this morning, there was talk of them having been raids on, air raids on that part of the city again. And again, those some children have been got out, but there are many left behind. South Sudan, where there is civil war, and also famine, and the children and the people cannot go out to farm their lands, and also are starving, and so many are getting out and are having to flee. Last Christmas, not just this one, my niece sent me this book to read for Christmas. It's called A City of Thorns, and it tells a story of Syria, of the refugees from South Sudan, particularly the younger people who have escaped and have fled to this enormous refugee camp in northern Kenya. And it's powerful reading. If anyone would like to borrow it, it's not an easy read, but it's very powerful. And it's going through the lives of some of these people, of why they fled, the problems that forced them to flee, and also why the problems they now have in their refugee camp. Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, where again there's continual civil war going on, people trying to escape from the rebels, and children and young boys being recruited to become boy soldiers and fight for them. We hear of the Rohingya refugees from Myanmar going into Bangladesh, and they've been persecuted because they are Muslim in a country that is mainly Buddhist, and all the suffering that's going on there. And a team has just gone out to help to treat children, the people who are suffering and dying from diphtheria. We hear of Nigeria and the girls being taken by Boko Haram and used as hostages and being raped and used as slaves by these people. There's Iraq, where war continues and where they are fighting the ISIS states, but where people are trapped within cities where they're trying to get the rebels out. Do they flee and risk being shot at by snipers, or do they stay and risk being killed by the bombings and the invading forces? And then there's Palestine, where there's a conflict between Israel and the Palestinians, and indiscriminate bombings and rockets being fired, particularly into the Gaza Strip, killing who knows who. It makes your heart weep, doesn't it? So what do we do? What can we do? Obviously, the first thing we can do is, and the main thing we do is prayer. And in a little while, we're going to move into small groups so that we can pray about some of these issues. But also, we need to have an awareness. We need to have an awareness of what is going on and not shut our minds to it. So reading books like that about the City of Thorns, looking up on the websites to find out what's going on, we need to know, we need to know. And then we can campaign. We can begin to campaign. You might think, well, where do I start? How do I campaign? Well, just going on to, for example, the Tear Fund website, and if you go onto that, if you click on Get Involved, it'll tell you what particular campaigns they are, and you can send petition in online, dead easy. You don't have to be doing lots of complicated things. Just click on Get on your computers, look at www.tearfund.org, click on the where it says get involved, and that'll lead you to links where you can sign a petition against things that are wrong in this world and where we can begin to make a difference. And then we can support those who are working with these vulnerable people. BMS are doing a lot of work. They do relief work. We've got Claire and Michael in Lebanon, where there's a lot of work going on with the Syrian refugees and where they are working there as well. And then there's also BMS does, has set up different projects working with people who are in Thailand, maybe in danger of prostitution and getting them out of prostitution. There's another project in Calcutta where they've set up a company to produce bags, really good quality bags. There you are. That's one of them. And I'm very fond of this bag. And it's called Freeset. So if you go online, freesetglobal.org, I think it is, or .com, I can't remember. You can find that, and you can buy these bags, and these women are able to have work, make money, and so they are taken out of prostitution, and their children also do not have to go into prostitution as well. Just the other day, I had a letter from BMS about the work they are doing in South Sudan, about the relief work. Our relief work is supporting those affected by violence and civil war in South Sudan, where over 2 million people have had to flee their homes and are now living in refugee camps throughout the country. Unable to work or feed their families, these people are at risk of starvation without assistance. Severe drought has exacerbated the situation, with the food crisis extending to nearby Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia, with 6 million people facing desperate levels of hunger. BMS have been working with our partners in South Sudan to provide emergency food and agricultural training to those affected. This is not just bringing much needed food to those affected in this conflict and drought, but also helping families and communities feed themselves as we provide tools, seeds, and agricultural training. This is already making a difference, with our partners reporting a first harvest for those who have received help so far. So helping causes such as this, can supporting them, can help relieve and make a future better, because it's not just treating the problem, but also the cause as well. The other thing I've got in my bag here is Fair Trade biscuits. I'll put these at the back afterwards, so there might be enough for everyone if the kids don't eat them all first. And if we buy fair trade stuff, this is giving people an opportunity to earn a living and to get out of poverty and to not want to flee because of famine and all the rest of it. There's so much that we can do. But when we look at these situations, we're thinking, where's God in all this? Where's God? Where was he when all those innocent children were killed in Bethlehem? Where is he now when we see these children suffering in Yemen, in Syria, and in Sudan? Surely he's there suffering with them. But we need to remember the message that Christmas brought us. Do you remember we thought of the four Advent candles which represented what Christ brings into the world. He brings hope, he brings peace, he brings joy, and he brings love. And we might think, where is it today? But that is what he will bring, and he can bring it through us as we work with him to bring hope to the people and to promote peace and goodwill so that people can live in love and harmony and have joy in their lives. So now I'd like us to move into small groups. I think I've given you plenty to pray about. So just pray about some of these things. Pray for these children and pray for our response in it. And then Maz will take over.